Hello, dudes and babes. Happy New Year. It's the Great Debates.
Yeah.
Problematic.
New voices.
I liked it.
Yeah, I liked it.
It's the new year. We're trying new things out.
I'm hearing some new guests.
There are some new guests. Well, actually, there's some old guests, some guys that we like to have around every year. It didn't quite work to do it at the holidays, but we're very psyched to have BJ Novak and John Mayer back in the studio with us.
Yeah.
Once welcome again, back, guys. For our sort of traditional holiday episode this year, it's a New Year's episode.
Yeah.
I do feel like we should, this being the new year and all, let's jump right into it.
I think that's probably what's for
better. Oh, that's a good idea.
I think it'd be cool if we just had our guests square off. Is that
make them
kind
jump.
Of a,
sure.
Whoa. A plan? I've got a top, and whoever wants to take the pro can jump in. The topic is, and I'll put 4 minutes on the clock, nothing wrong with a good superstition.
I'll take the pro on that. That's
like
easy.
It.
John here taking the pro.
Go for it.
There's nothing wrong with a good superstition. And let's, right off the bat, let's delineate that this is a good superstition, not a bad superstition. But I will say that most superstitions are harmless. They're kindly. They have a certain sort of wholesomeness to them. I would put a superstition somewhere between religion and atheism. I think it's religion light. I think it's just standalone kiosk. Of religion, it's a simple, it's a single serving of a religion. It also has a little bit of OCD in it, but not to the point where it will rule your life. I've never seen anybody completely change their life path because of a superstition. A superstition can be walked over pretty quickly. So it's a guiding principle that lives inside of the imagination space. Always meant to be good-hearted and fun. It's spooky in the sense that a third-grade Halloween party would be spooky. And I think it reduces some of the more natural, dark, real fears to a more cartoonish level of things to be to try to avoid, you know. Would you move out of a hotel if it had a 13th floor and you were on it? If you were on the 13th floor, no, you wouldn't. But you take note of it, and you would chalk it up to the ongoing narrative of superstition in its fairy tale form. And I think that's good for people. I think it connects us to our child self. And I think there's nothing wrong with a good superstition.
I'm BJ Novak. I'm going to take the con on this. There is something a little wrong with a good superstition. It's okay. But there's something wrong with it. You made a great point when you said it's religion light. Let's separate two different aspects of religion and religion light. Religion has a lot of good to it, a lot of moral code, traditions, and it also has beliefs that are not grounded in fact or science or practicality. Superstition is only the bad part. It is the religion without anything logical or time proven as helpful to people. So that's obviously a bad thing. What is good, right? Decision-making based on who you are as a person, what you want, your own free will. If I told you, well, I can't do that because my mom said it was a bad idea, or my mom thought the 13th floor was a bad floor for me to be on, that would be sad and embarrassing and a little bad. And yet, if Susan Miller says it in the Astrology Times, there are people who listen to that. I do get nervous when I'm on the 13th floor. I think that's a little bad. I think, what if there's a great room on the 13th floor? Now it's in my head that, like, God damn it, if, like, I die on this 13th floor, I feel so stupid. Or if I hear a noise in the middle, I'll get scared that I did some fucking wrong decision. That's bad. There's nothing about the 13th floor that should be in my head at all. I am a little superstitious, and there's something wrong with that.
It would be sad if your mother said, don't stay on the 13th floor, and you didn't stay on the 13th floor. But it would be fun if you were like, guys, my mom's a character. And you came over and she was like, don't stay on the 13th floor. And then when you told her you were on the 13th floor, she was like, all right. But you know what they say about the 13th floor? That's colorful. Also, moms are inextricably linked to superstition. Might I invoke stepping on a crack and breaking your mother's back? Mm. This is one of the great parables of family.
Invoked.
And where does this get us, this wisdom? Thanks to this, we walk more weirdly.
Let's just say,
worry more.
Let's say you're on your way to a divorce hearing. You and your wife.
Wow.
No.
I think we got to hear the end of that thought.
You and your wife of 10 years are getting divorced. It's a bitter, acrimonious separation. You're on your way to the very first divorce hearing. You're nervous, knees weak, palms sweating, and you're walking and you're looking down.
Your mom is looming over everything.
And just for one simple, fleeting moment, you look and you go, I'm not going to step on the crack. I'll break my mother's back. And for that one moment, you are reminded of the simple joy of being a child, however far away from it is.
The anxiety of being a child.
No, I think comparatively, what you're experiencing is for one second, this connective tissue to your youth, a sense memory. You go, oh, don't want to step on the crack. It's something to do. It is something to take your mind off the more sobering perils that happen that we're fraught with every single day. I think a superstition is a relief from the doldrums of life. And it's as spooky as a third grade Halloween party.
What if your soon-to-be ex-wife saw you avoid the crack and was like, that's so cute and funny how you avoid the crack.
And they started back together. It was a re-meet cute.
So if Healy jumped in, I think you should jump in. We should get some time here.
Oh, am I on your side?
I mean, if Healy seems to be...
No, I think you're right.
I didn't think that was a side. Sorry. I just couldn't resist it.
It felt like a side.
You were tagging his story in support.
I wish I hadn't finished the thought. The cliffhanger was so much better than the actual...
I don't know. I think you finished nicely. I'm going with John on this one.
Nice. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Wow.
Thank you very much.
Congrats to John.
Thank you.
Condolences to BJ.
Yeah. And
no one brought up the song Very Superstitious.
Oh, interesting.
We wouldn't have that tune.
Sure.
Without a little good superstition.
Well, I don't really know the lyrics of it.
Because Stevie Wonder says, when you believe in things that you don't understand, then you suffer. Superstition ain't the way.
Interesting.
Mm. Yeah.
So, hard to say.
But the song feels like a pro-superstition song, just the vibe of it.
It's such a good tune.
Very superstitious. I start moving. It's in a good mood.
Right.
It's both good and bad for superstitions because, like you said, wouldn't exist without it. Mm-hmm. But the message—that's
sort of John's argument in one.
Man,
guys, I thought it might be fun to do a little topping about them.
Oh, top about them. So you're
if
talking
we
about
did a little group top about.
Yeah,
them, right?
We got a bunch of tops in front of us, and we're trying to figure out. We don't have a game plan for the rest of this.
No,
let's see
where the top about them takes us. Does that sound good?
I love it.
We can pick some sides and...
Who's got a top? Mm. We're topping about them.
I got one. It's a little more lighthearted.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
But it's a question I've had for a long time. And the top is milk tastes good.
Pro. Milk's delicious.
Wow. Mm. That sounds like you're ready to throw down.
Sure.
Does anyone want to take
does
the con
feel
on
like
on
milk
a...
doesn't taste good?
I think it doesn't taste good.
Okay.
No, I'd say throw 3 minutes on the clock here and just see what happens.
See where it takes us.
Can we just have BJ and take the con against Steve on this?
Is that cool?
That's good.
I'll help you out if you need it.
Sure. I don't understand. I mean, we kind of came here to play great debates.
I'm sorry. Of course.
I've got 4 minutes
on the
clock. Not
fan great debates, you know.
I've got 4 minutes.
The fantasy of the great debates, listener, is you jump in here with the great debaters.
Oh, yeah. Go for it, man.
Not like you hire Dan Medina for a private debate for your birthday party.
Well, that, by the way, is a better fantasy.
That's popular,
by the way.
Too. People, I know that you make a lot on that.
Who am I debating? Who am I demolishing? Just
you're
BJ?
Debating BJ?
BJ. Dave? Okay, fine. Wow. 3 minutes on the clock?
4 minutes on the clock.
Ooh, that extra minute. That could decide it.
Healy taking the pro. Milk tastes good.
Mother's milk.
I'm sorry, Healy. This is a listener, top listener, Eric K. sent this in. Thank you.
Mother's milk. Milk and honey. Milk of the gods. These are all phrases we use to describe a sweet, wonderful taste because milk tastes good. We use it in ice cream. We drink a glass of it. We're getting calcium. It feels good. And that feeling of goodness is reflected in the taste, which is a sweet one, a nutritious one, a positive one that calms the mouth, kills any spice taste. Milk tastes good. Put it in coffee. Put it in your Thai iced tea. Get yourself some milk.
All right, let's say you're blindfolded. Someone hands you a glass of something. You don't know what it is. You think it might be water, probably. It could be orange juice. It could be Coca-Cola. It's something people have in the house. No one's playing a prank on you. You take a big sip. It's milk. How do you feel? Refreshed?
I think
happy?
That could be great. You could be like, yeah, I haven't had milk in a while. This is delicious. You're playing on the uncertainty, which
no,
I agree.
I'm saying that
milk can catch you by surprise.
You got to get yourself in an attitude and... You know, when I heard that milk was not always good for you. I just thought, thank God. Like, this is so weird that we're drinking this. It tastes weird. It turns rotten easily. And well, here's another thing. Whenever you smell milk to see if it's turned, it never smells good. You're never like, oh, yeah, that's good. You're always like, it smells a little bad, but it
we're
does
not talking
say,
about the smell of milk.
Well,
we're talking about a
related.
Glass of milk, a sip of milk, a taste of milk. Good, good, good.
If I
this coffee's
you,
too bitter, put if, some milk in it.
If I
sweet white sweetness that's natural and pure.
If I hand you a glass of milk and say, I'm not sure this is good, will you take a taste? No matter how good it is, it's not going to taste good.
But that's true of anything. Like,
no.
If anything, the,
if
the,
I said, is this
the fragility
Coca-Cola
of
good?
Milk, the impermanence of it,
makes it
adds
more beautiful.
To its wonder. It's like a Japanese cherry blossom.
What if I offered you a glass of chocolate milk?
Great.
What about vanilla milk?
Yeah. I mean, down in there in Rhode Island, I've had coffee milk.
Doesn't
kind
the
of
idea of vanilla milk show you the limits of milk?
Look, Carnation made a sort of vanilla milk product. I was into like milk and milk substitutes as a kid because I was trying to bulk up. I was too skinny. I looked at milk as a solution, Carnation milk type products. So I've experimented with different flavored milks.
Yeah.
The very fact that you can take milk and add flavors to it, play with it, that you can use it as a solid
I've
base.
I've never added a flavor to juice,
a power.
Soda.
Those are tired. They're one shots. Milk is, it's absorbs. It takes. That's the base taste. Adding, bringing out new notes. Milk's powerful, good stuff. Milk tastes good.
My closing argument is, give me a break.
Wow.
There you have it.
I mean, we're ready to close this one a minute early, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Let's do it.
Medina, what do you think, bud?
Okay. I don't know that I felt good about either side here.
Wow.
There was a lot left on the table.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. What was missing?
Yeah, what was missing? How about the people who sat it out also? What was missing?
Well, I feel like milk is what the big ingredient in ice cream.
Yeah.
Ice cream tastes delicious.
Flour mm-hmm. doesn't taste
yeah,
delicious.
It's sugar.
Flour's in a lot of good stuff.
If you have a Pop-Tart, a s'mores Pop-Tart, toasted or untoasted, and you're halfway through that first Pop-Tart, and it's delicious, and you want something to go with it. You can drink soda. Someone offers you soda.
No.
No. You can drink water.
Because you want something that is the opposite of tasty to kind of take the edge off.
Take the edge off all that taste.
I will say, to me, the most convincing argument I heard was from BJ, which is the threat of sour milk is always going to be part of the milk experience.
It's part of the milk thrill.
But it's part of fish.
To me,
it's part of the roller coaster
ride.
It's
part of fish. And
it's a con for fish.
It is a con for fish. The specter is always looming. It's like you always are reminded of what sour milk tastes like right before you taste milk, even if it's not sour.
I mean, what we're really getting down to there is that like death is part of what makes life so enjoyable.
Yeah, flowers,
that's
flowers.
A ridiculous extrapolation of what we're talking about. We're talking about whether milk tastes good or not.
We're getting to the core of the fact that all pleasure comes with it the knowledge of decay. Those two things are
that's
connected.
That's absurd.
No beverage.
That argument I like.
No beverage.
I do.
No beverage.
The poignancy.
Becomes more its temperature than milk. Cold milk.
Interesting.
Is more cold at the same temperature than soda or water. The density of milk, the way that milk is chilled, whatever particles are in milk, that it's almost like milk is in and of itself a coolant.
This guy loves milk.
I like a warm milk, or at least I used to a lot. Like right before bed? Come on. Yeah.
Maybe we should
good
stop
night
saying
nurse.
The word milk. And
yeah, it's a little weird.
Get another top.
What is this podcast? Five white guys talking about whether milk tastes
milk
good?
Is good.
What is this for?
I don't know.
What is this?
8,000 listeners.
I also heard things that sounded like they could have been really old album titles by a band called Milk. Like, Taste of Milk.
A little taste of milk.
I was like, these all sound like
a dash of milk.
A dash of milk. A taste of milk.
Dash of milk. You got the 12 best hits.
There's no other food that you say tastes good. No other food has, when you're saying why it tastes good, is the argument. Well, part of it is that it might taste terrible. That doesn't apply to other foods.
Well, the
that's
blowfish
why
sensation
the,
is.
The blowfish are like those peppers where like 1 in 10 of them are terrible or whatever.
Yeah.
I think oysters. I think there is a poignancy,
it's
as Healy was pointing out, that Bourdain and the other real macho foodies
the
like a food that could spoil.
Avocado.
Yeah.
That's.
Avocado, kind of the milk of vegetables.
Yeah.
It's got that same consistency going on. How do you even describe
it? There should be some alliance there, definitely.
Absolutely.
I think there are avocado smoothies.
What are they doing?
Yeah,
yeah, milk and avocado. Big milk and big
milk
avocado.
And avocado.
Gotta get together.
That could be a meeting
the
I'd like
sort
to attend.
Of yeah. Neutral, chalky guys.
Yes.
All right.
Okay. I've got some other tops we could...
Please.
Let's just talk about them and see what happens.
Top our way into it.
Here's one for you. There is no time too late to send a text.
Well, I would take the pro on that. I mean, we could also just top about it, but I personally feel like, of course, this is... I mean, that to me is a given.
That there's no time too late?
Yeah.
This is time of day, time of night.
Wait,
of
I think we got okay. a natural, we got a natural match.
Okay.
Okay, so it's Dave King taking the pro.
Yeah.
With 4 minutes on the clock, just to give us some guidelines and some goalposts. The topic is there is no, John Mayer taking the con, there is no time too late to send a text.
There's no, I'm Dave King, I'm taking the pro. There's no time too late to send a text. One of the main reasons is that most people either use the do not disturb function when they're going to sleep, or they keep their phone somewhere far from their bed where the text isn't going to wake them up. There's very little harm in sending a text to someone, whether it's 1 a.m., 4 a.m. The chances that you're going to actually wake them up are very low. It's in this day and age, because of the way people use their phones, sending a text is not that different than sending someone an email. You get it instantly if you are on your phone, but if you're not, you get it the next time you're on your phone. If you don't have Do Not Disturb on, there's actually a good chance that you're expecting a text from someone for either a, I'll say, a sexy reason or an emergency reason or a medical reason. And in those cases, so much the better that you can text someone in the middle of the night and possibly wake them up. Hey, you up? Hey, you know, Uncle Pat's sick. We got to get to the hospital. Hey, you didn't pick me up for my damn 4 a.m. Ride to the airport. Where the F are you?
Hey, you up? And Uncle Pat's sick.
It's the same guy. He's got a lot on his lots going on. It's a busy day. So for those reasons, I would say it's never too late to send someone a text.
I'm John Mayer. I'm taking the con. I'm going to start a little abstract. If I knew where you lived, and I was allowed to leave something at your doorstep anytime I wanted to, you said, leave something at my door if you need to. I'll leave a book for you. Go, hey, check this book out. But I leave it there at 3 o'clock in the morning. And I, for some reason, I wrote the time at the time. I said, yeah, I came by at 3 o'clock in the morning. I left your book at the front steps. That's, you're going to feel a little bit like I was socially treading on your life. And I think that's the same thing. Now, you are right in that theoretically and practically in some ways, someone's not going to hear it if they've got their phone on Do Not Disturb. Mm. However, text is a top-level message. It's at the top of the phone. It's a surface-level message. It really it supposes a lot of closeness and personal contact. It's not like you have to go into your email to look at it. The text, normally notification is on the top of the screen. However, you could argue that if you wanted to. But most of all, texts are time-stamped. You wake up in the morning. This is the point I was making at the beginning. And you see that someone from work texted you a question about when you were going to have the latest a revision of a script done. And it's 4 o'clock in the morning that they sent that. You can't help that you're going to feel a little uneasy about that.
I'm BJ Novak. I'm going to support John on this.
Whoa!
He started in the abstract.
He threw the support flag.
I'm
and he entered
I'm
the
A.
Debate.
All right, I'm his teammate.
The blue
Let's not.
The support flag was thrown. No, go ahead.
This is bullying here.
Yeah,
so,
I love it.
I'm going to pull out my phone. I encourage you to pull out your phones and do the same.
Okay.
I'm going to just read some of the most recent texts, and if these were sent at 4:45 a.m., how they would come across. How was your new year? That's kind of weird. Send it 4:45.
Sure.
Call in 5.
Seems okay. Off base.
Need
yeah.
Need to do American Rag. It's heaven.
I mean, that's great. You wake up to that text, suddenly you got, hey,
let's
man,
hit some eggs.
Someone's dying to go to American Rag and shop for vintage shoes. Let's fucking do it, man. I'll be there at 5:30 in the morning.
These are all
look, but those aren't the, here's
anything,
the thing,
any, almost any text you gave emergency situations, and of course, it is never too late to save a life. You know, it's never
glad,
too late to get Uncle Pat at 4 a.m. to go to the hospital,
right.
Of course. But in general, the kind of texts we send,
yeah.
If you send them at 4:45 a.m. to use a specific time that helps my example, that's too late because the context of the time that you were awake thinking of this colors it.
Yeah, man. Well, I guess I'm out of time because the support flag was thrown. Wow.
I'm going with the con on this one.
Yeah, I mean, if it takes two people to beat me, then that's
fine.
Well,
no, I mean, I'm kidding.
Vivid.
Can I say that
the book, the dropping off the book thing, you're right. There is an intrusion of some kind. I get it. Go ahead.
But I want to say that I agree that there isn't a time that's too late, but I think we did a better job of proving the point.
Exactly.
By the way, I thought this was teams. I wasn't. I thought you both were a team and we were a team.
We probably should have been clear or also, made a decision.
Now I understand.
For me, the
dropping the book off at the doorstep set it up, but the idea that the text is at the surface of the phone and there are deeper places in the phone where things could happen, like a mailbox.
Deeper.
That's a fine place.
That's
to
why
send
we email.
Things.
Email's 24/7.
But the whole, I guess
that rang true for me.
I'll tell you this.
Yeah.
Here's the condition. If someday text spam became a thing, then we would be allowed to go for it. If you got a Home Depot text at 4 a.m. that said savings code for Home Depot, then it would be a free for all socially. You could jump in. That's why email's fine because your email goes off all day with spam. So spam is the sort of front runner when it comes to...
Because that has knocked email down from the surface.
Guys, I'm going to have us take just a quick break, and then we're going to come right back with more guest debates here in the new year on The Great Debates. Okay, we're back with more Great Debates.
Yeah.
We've got John Mayer and BJ Novak in the house. We've got Steve Healy and Dave King in the house. Producer Mark is over there. It's a full house. In our last half of the episode, we were topping about him.
Right.
And I'd like to just kind of keep doing that because I feel like it's leading to some...
Something will break out if really we keep good, topping.
Yeah.
Great debates.
A top will pop.
A top will pop.
Okay, here's a top we could top about.
Yeah.
Baseball outfielders can be on their phones.
First thoughts?
Yeah, a little bit.
What?
That they can a little bit be on their phones. Can't be all the time, but they can catch a Pokemon when it's like...
Catch a Pokemon?
Yeah.
When it's what? Finish that sentence. They can catch a Pokemon when it's...
When they have a good read that the pitcher's going to take a little breather, you know, like when it's...
Yeah. I'm pro too. I think it of course it doesn't interrupt their gameplay if there's a relief pitcher and they're just on their phone for a bit. The guy's warming up, and it makes it more relatable. Now, obviously, if they're texting, that isn't that cool. It looks like they're not taking it seriously. But let's say they're like they win the game. Or there's a home run, and he takes a selfie of himself going
talking.
For or it. He's texting. Shows he loves the game. What? Although I guess if he's the outfielder, the other guy hit the home run. But
his
teammate
gets
a great catch. He takes a photo with it.
What if he's texting like a couple insights about the game as it's developing?
Well, I was thinking also.
Oh man, he tweets about it. The sports channels would love that.
The actual use for this would be like looking at a spray chart of the opposing batter to see where he should be positioning.
Oh, yeah, maybe they shouldn't be allowed to be on their phones because it's cheating.
Well, that's very possible.
Yeah, you could steal signal so easily.
Okay.
Okay, so we basically agree they should be on their phones.
They should always,
All right.
Anyone hate the idea? No? No baseball purists? John?
Not a baseball purist.
Okay.
Okay. Well, I guess we solved it.
Yeah, I love when we just solve one without having to fight.
However, I gotta jump in. The con.
Talk about it.
Baseball already has a reputation of being boring and sluggish. The idea that these guys, even they're on their phones during a baseball game, bad for the brand.
It would damage baseball.
It really confirms that even the ball players are bored.
I think it damages baseball itself, but in the social media arena, the MLB Instagram page is going to be amazing, albeit a little samey from shot to shot, but I think it'd be pretty cool.
They really leaned into it and they developed some sort of arm wear where players could safely fasten their phones so that they could at a moment's notice snap a picture or tweet live from the outfield. I think people might love that. It'd be corny as fuck, but people might love it.
So you have a holster.
You have just a little holster. You get
slap it on there.
One of the smallest iPhone, whatever. Still got a great camera on there. You'd have access like no photographer.
Yeah.
It'd be kind of amazing.
Who would be the cool old school guy who wouldn't, no phone? He's a traditionalist.
I don't know. I don't know if they're still out there. I mean, maybe what's his that guy? I can't even. Beltran, is he still playing? He's like the oldest outfielder that comes to mind.
And as long as you have a phone in your hand, you should be able to have headphones on, like earbuds, and that would allow you to listen to whatever music motivated you the most. Mm. And you would trade the sound of the crack of the bat. You would be trading that for the overall adrenalization that you'd be having while your favorite playlist was going.
And if you, by the way, if you have a phone and headphones, you should be allowed to have your favorite snack in the outfield.
Yeah.
Because you're, at this point, you're just hanging out.
And a laptop.
And a laptop. Because maybe you need to get
a place
to
sit.
You say your dog?
Yeah. These guys are on the road. Their dogs get hardly any time with them.
Healy, you're being facetious, but if you were allowed to bring your dog into the outfield of a baseball game,
that would make it more exciting.
Yeah. Like, if there was a ball in the corner and he was able to get it and bring it back,
I say no. You know why? Because the next thing you know, you're allowed to have a hawk. Now the hawk is catching the ball out of the air.
God forbid you get to go to a stadium and watch dogs and hawks running around to collect balls and be part of the game. That sounds unbelievable.
Every time there's a change in the inning, you just see people lugging their stuff out in wagons.
Well, you'd get a servant at that point. You'd have a guy.
Need like a zoologist or something.
There'd be animal trainers. This
is great. Hmm. Oh, I'm glad we talked about
that. Highlights would be incredible.
We kind of reverse invented the zoo.
Basically, what we're saying is yes.
Well, we combine two things that aren't doing that great in
that's right. Cool.
To make them more popular. Okay, speaking of popularity.
Sorry, last thing. Think about the cross promotion. You've got Blue Jays, you've got Marlins.
Yeah. Yep.
You bring the actual animals on the field, people would lose their minds.
Yeah, they would.
They sure would.
Okay, speaking of popularity, I have another top to talk about. It's a new year, and I want to know what we think of whether or not butt popularity has peaked.
I'm such a con.
What?
Yeah.
Not yet.
You're long on butt stuff?
I'm long the human butt.
Healy, when we, during the break, mentioned this topic, you exploded with just like, I don't even know how to describe it, but just like, oh yeah, I got it.
My argument is not going to be revolutionary. I'm not going to change the game, but I think I'm just...
I get your argument is, what else could you possibly bet on if not that?
Well, you could tie butt popularity over the last 5 years to a certain civility that men are trying to practice so that we don't go for the beacons of...
Let's put some time on the clock.
Wow!
Let's do it.
Steve, are you taking pro?
I'm saying that
it's popularity
has peaked.
I'm going to say the popularity will have peaked. No, okay. The thing about peaked is that you can't tell right now. It takes a year to find out that peaked happened in retrospect. So I will say that it has peaked, meaning a year from now.
You get a year's grace.
You get a year.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah,
a year.
Cool.
Okay.
Yes. All right.
We're debating.
Go.
As far
go ahead.
As
I'm opening
concerned.
Statement.
I'm going to say that the love of the butt was out of necessity. We had men, in a show of deference and respect to women, had to move away from this sort of tired trope of boobs, of loving boobs, but all men love boobs. We have migrated our love of boobs to the butt because we feel that it's a bit of a hiding place, a bit of a cooking of the books. You know, we can talk about having a butt because men and women both have butts.
Right.
And we can say, oh, a bigger butt means like a thicker person. So there's body acceptance inside of that. So we're hiding behind all these things, not out of being sinister, but because we want to, I think, ultimately not disrespect women. But now that women themselves are beginning to free the nipple and are beginning to be more... See, we have to follow women in this. Now that women are more embracing of the breast, men are going to follow along. So, and I'm only reading the tea leaves here. I'm not saying I myself am changing. I'm just saying this is the trend. I think it's going to go back to boobs because women are going back to boobs. And I feel that there's going to be a direct correlation between the more of a foothold that feminism gets, the more that boobs are going to come back into the arena of mass enjoyment and pleasure and being able to talk about it and say, wow, I love this girl with this boobs. You need only look at the love calendar videos that have been on Instagram over the month of December, where this really is a clarion call. This really is a return to heterosexualism of women. And I think it's on women's time. They're saying, we want to go back to the sort of hetero fetishization of women, and or the male hetero fetishization of women. And that's why I think as women become more comfortable with it, you're going to see men begin to move their stock back into boobs.
Okay, John is a zero-sum kind of guy, I guess. I'm a principle of abundance kind of guy. I think increased popularity of the boob will not take away from the butt in any way. The butt will continue to be popular. I mean, possibly you could argue that its share of popularity will be slightly differently distributed, but the pie itself will get bigger rather than that sliver of butt getting smaller. And if you think that the you seem to be associating boobs with kind of heteronormativity, the butt as kind of a gay or androgynous play.
It's more inclusive, yeah.
But I, if you think that the androgynous or homosexual effect on our sexual mores has anywhere close to peaked, you are crazy. We're at the very beginning of a renaissance of bizarre sexual, unusual sexual, non-heteronormative sexual principles that will play into butt popularity, expand butt popularity.
What do you know that we don't? What?
I'm just like John. I'm
reading. Where can I invest?
We're looking at the same tea leaves, but I'm getting a completely different picture.
I'll say.
Look, I think the butt was really popular in like classical Rome, the decaying age of the Roman Empire. I think you're seeing that reflected in their statuary, in their imagery. I think times of abundance, the butt gets bigger and bigger. The Renaissance, Titian, we're seeing huge butts in these paintings. I think our society, frankly, is just going in that direction of development towards decadence, towards extravagance, and the butt is going to play a huge role in that.
I think we differ greatly on the origin story of the butt being the object of affection and desire that it is today. I think men chose to go the direction of the butt for two reasons. Number one, women were there all the time. Women have always been in Buttsville. Men went there because there was a certain novelty to it. Hey, don't you find it interesting that I'm not talking about your boobs? Mm. Don't you think that I'm such a different guy because I'm talking about
your butt? I'm classy. I'm staring at your ass.
Okay.
I'm not like the other guys.
I'm an ass man. You can trust me.
By the way, you're not entirely wrong.
I get it. Yeah.
Healy, John is in top form tonight, but I think your passion in that debate wins.
Thank you. Handily. That's cool. Great.
Yeah, that's what you want to see for the listeners.
Great.
This expression, this is what you want to see a debater at his peak. This is not just the mind. This is the heart.
This is a debate that can be proven. This is a provable debate.
Oh, yeah. Debate we'll check in a year
from now. We're going to do Google Trends, but I'm very with Healy. I think all sexuality, I didn't know it till you said it, but all sexuality is just exploding. It's like cryptocurrency. Yeah. You know, one guy says Bitcoin's not going to go up because Ethereum's the thing. They're both going to go up.
I hope you're right.
I thought the best detail of the debate was the love advent calendar because that is a specific. Have you guys seen that?
No, I don't really know what that is.
It is intense and it is very.
What are we talking about?
The what?
It's a series of videos made like starring a bunch of supermodels, for lack of a better word. You've got Radikowski and I forget who
Haley Baldwin was Haley in Baldwin. One, which was so good. It was such a return to my eighth grade.
Yeah, it's like.
Who's masterminding this?
Love, I don't even know.
It's Love Your Show.
Not Love on Netflix.
The magazine.
No, but it's a really brazenly like heterosexual playboy butts and boobs kind of thing.
The best way I can put these videos is that it's almost like if the Carl's Jr. ads were done like haute couture. Because there's like food involved and it's very.
What are we selling here? Clothes?
I don't even know. Okay.
I think it's a return to. I think it's. For me, I think it's a return to some sort of age old, like straight up porno thing.
Who's where,
like,
putting the money down? A magazine?
A magazine.
Fashion. Okay.
And if the world is comfortable with that, it means that things are changing just a little bit if the people in. And these are, by the way. These are huge people in these videos. These are people who I think wouldn't make these kind of moves unless they had asked around and found out that, yes, this is now culturally acceptable to be a little bit more mainstream in the sense that you're doing this sort of eighth grade penthouse-y thing.
That is the space that it is occupying.
It's super penthouse-y. I mean, it's like, remember these videos, these video centerfolds? Like Playboy video centerfold VHS tapes used to find strewn about in the woods?
I never had the in the woods experience. Healy, you and I grew up in the same.
Oh, I had a complete in the woods.
I had a woods experience. We didn't have VHS tapes in the woods. I was embellishing there, but we had magazines.
Finding a magazine in the woods, yes.
But I want to know who's leaving them.
Yeah, that's a real
sickos.
Thing?
Yeah.
Sickos.
Probably other teens. I don't know.
What kind of sicko would do that? Thank you.
The woods of my youth had an
fucking
air
sickos.
Of
fucking sickos.
Sexual tawdriness a little bit, yeah.
So that means that Justin Timberlake's new album, Man of the Woods, has a different connotation.
That'd be so cool if in his music video at the end he kind of dropped a Playboy album. Group of kids, like a hero. Like clearly, the point of view of the video is nice.
Wouldn't it be cool
Find
if it turned
JT's
out?
Playboy.
What if it turned out there was sort of a Johnny Appleseed figure in the 80s and 70s who was going around the woods?
This is a great sketch.
Leaving pornos for you know, boys.
Johnny Porno Seed. I mean, I guess the lesson here is like every town had one, apparently.
Yeah,
because it's the
right.
How does that? What's
I can't. I can get to how we found them and split the pages up and went. All right, you get to pick a page. I get a page, and you but I don't understand how they left.
Should we host chat this?
I think we are. Yeah.
This is host chat.
When I was, you guys are from the region. Tell me, I've never told anyone this.
Love it.
But you guys are from Needham,
mm-hmm.
right? And this guy could have just been calling 617 numbers. It's so like out of an old-timey, seedy era that it didn't even surprise me when it happened. But I was probably like 9 years old, and the payphone was ringing in Newton Center right outside Woolworth's. And I pick it up, and I say hello. And the guy says, "You ever see your mother's pussy?"
Oh, no.
Wow.
Yeah. And I said, "No, but I've seen yours." And pretty good for nine.
For nine?
But it was kind of seedy and embarrassing. I felt a little gross for sure, but it wasn't traumatic. I just sort of felt like, "Yep, that's the real world for you. That's the big city." And so there are people. I have another question on Sunset and La Brea. This all ties into the same topic, okay. But Sunset and La Brea. There are a lot of homeless people in LA. There are a lot of mentally ill people in LA. But the ones at Sunset and La Brea are always screaming. They're always walking across screaming. A lot of different guys. How do they know to go there? How do creeps know to leave a Playboy in the woods? How do guys know to call payphones and say sleazy stuff? Like, how does this knowledge spread? There was no dark web back then.
It's like hobo culture
or something. Hobo science. I'm feeling like some tops.
Okay.
I've got another top to throw out there. And this one is interesting. The topic is soup plantations gotta change its name.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Does BJ, everyone... you feel you're...
Yeah, I was at soup plantation the other night, last night.
Okay.
And it just felt vibrationally depressed and depressing. And I think it's because they know if they get any bigger, people aren't going to let them have a name that is essentially it's soup plus plantation. Plantation only means slave plantation. It's not a big enough place to even bother changing the name. And the employees know that. But if it were any more successful, we'd be like, "Hey, this is so fucked up. Like the only connotation of your name besides soup is plantations."
I'm going to tell you why they shouldn't change that.
Should we
name.
Put a couple mins on the
clock? I'm going to put a couple mins on the clock. Okay.
They have something very powerful at their disposal by not changing their name and not acknowledging that their name should be changed. And it's called plausible deniability.
It is?
Yes. The moment that they discuss publicly changing their name or change their name, they will retroactively start a fire. They will have pointed to something in the room that everyone to this day still not sure they know is in the room. And the moment that they complete that link where they say we're going to change the name or they talk about changing the name, I think everybody's going to go, "Yeah, the name's been wrong from the day you had it." And I think they're going to catch a little retroactive flack. Their only chance over this suspension bridge is to move forward and keep moving forward. Never blink. Double, triple, quadruple down and make everyone believe they're the only person who has a problem with it. This is their only way out. If I was consulting them, your only way out is through, grit your teeth, and never admit it, and you'll keep this everyone's singular experience of scratching their heads internally.
Is there a moment where you could see, okay, cut bait on that, you're going to have to, like, what would it take?
If they sponsor the Golden Globes... If they sponsor an awards, show. I think sponsoring something. And the minute they sponsor something, there's an element that grows there that they would have to change.
So you take over, John. You're the new CEO of Soup Plantation, yes. Right? And they say, all right, what do you want to do first? What do you want to do?
I have these documents about our internal discussion about the name. Would you like to review those?
I want you to burn those right away.
Okay.
Those never existed.
Well, we have big dreams, John. We're thinking of sponsoring the Golden Globes, opening 5,000 new locations. What do you think? Where should we start?
I think we've got to have a conversation as to what our goals are.
Wait, I'm starting to think you're not very ambitious as CEO.
No, I'm ambitious.
You're resisting all of our...
Can you tell us your vision for Soup Plantation? Yeah.
When you were interviewed, John, by the board of directors, what did you say your vision was?
My vision was to bring delicious, value-driven soups.
All right, you're a product man.
I want to extend the Soup Plantation name and the sort of the branches of soup without compromising quality. And I also, that's about it. That's all that ever came to mind.
Wow. I'm surprised you got the job with such bland goals.
I'm going to jump in for John here. The White House was built by slaves in part. Should we change the name of the White House to something else? Do we really need to change the names of things just because they evoke certain awful parts of our history? What does the name Soup Plantation?
If it were called the Slave Built House, maybe.
Yeah, if it were called White Plantation House, yeah.
You guys are flying over this.
What I'm saying is the actual history of the White House is worse than that of Soup Plantation, but what you're suggesting is just because
you haven't looked into the history.
Name is Soup Plantation that for some reason we should change it to something, what, less offensive? Plantations exist. They're not all tied to slavery.
Well, this is my point.
You can work your way back to slavery through the name of almost any restaurant or almost any word.
Wendy's. BJ, is there any way?
Yeah, there were slaves named Wendy.
Is there any way to announce the changing of the name Soup Plantation without contrition?
Absolutely.
Without telegraphing contrition.
We're now focused on salads.
The entire food.
No, I was there last night. It's mostly a salad bar.
That is
and then
true.
I'd even put desserts at second.
Salad Plantation.
Yeah.
Didn't really quite get it there, did you?
Salad Camp.
Yeah, that's the way to do it. You focus more on salad.
Salad Camp.
I don't know that you can do it without telegraphing contrition, without telegraphing guilt.
Can I share my real feelings about
this?
This goes for Soup Plantation. This goes for the Washington Redskins. This goes for, all the things named after Woodrow Wilson at Princeton University. Fucking change the name. Don't just do it because you feel like you have to. Own it. Rebrand yourself. Make it a feature, not a bug.
I agree.
The woke soup franchise. Like
soup.
Hire a person of color.
Woke soup is actually woke soup.
Fill the board with nothing, with zero white men. Embrace it. Make it part of your mission.
Are you saying this on a global level? This is what the world needs. If you're selfishly involved in Soup Plantation,
you're Dan Snyder and you run the Washington Redskins, you are sitting on a colossal opportunity to say we've reflected
we're the
on the matter. And yes, exactly.
We're the Washington abolitionists.
We want to be on the right side of history.
Yeah.
We're going to name ourselves. Yeah.
Yeah.
Washington Harriet Tubbins or whatever the hell you want to do.
What if Soup Plantation has not been told that they're because they're so on the line? Soup Plantation is so on the edge of being a problem that they actually themselves have not been advised of this.
I mean, I am curious. I looked it up while you guys were talking. They have 104 locations. It's bigger than I thought it was.
Okay.
It's got to be talked about, right? But they also, the Wikipedia entry for Soup Plantation is pretty grim. The only information on here is they filed for bankruptcy in 2016, and also there was an outbreak of E. coli at an Orange County location. They're not doing great, and it seems like they're trying to rebrand.
These are all opportunities to rebrand. These are all good reasons to rebrand.
Producer Mark, can you tomorrow trademark woke soup for us?
we should trademark woke soup.
Yeah,
for sure. I mean, think about you could have a lot of fun with the flavors. Mm-hmm. I can't think of any,
I'm
but that
liking
would be
woke
fun.
Soup. Yeah, I'm liking woke soup a lot.
It's better than Soup Plantation.
Fresh hot woke.
We haven't even talked about the fact that what a labored portmanteau Soup Plantation is.
There's nothing to it.
They're hanging it all on the P that happens to
happens to begin the word plantation.
So lame.
Can't you Google the word soup plantation, change name, soup plantation, hate names?
You can't.
Why can't you find out right now if anyone has a problem?
If you try to Google it,
your phone shuts down.
Your phone shuts down.
Wow.
You can't do that.
Big soup. To use a big blank joke.
Do you think anyone at Soup Plantation will listen to this? Someone will forward.
Oh, like, yeah.
Hey, oh, I think yes.
Do you
yes.
think this puts them on the edge even more? To this is in a soup.
They've
plantation.
Thought about this. Oh, yeah. No, they're like, I don't think anyone's going to bring this
up. We're not getting free soup from this one.
Look, first result, Soup Plantation name change. There is a petition.
There's a petition.
Change.org. Garden Fresh Restaurant Corp. Remove the insensitive word plantation from your name.
Okay.
Which, by the way, would mean that the restaurant would just be called Soup. Or just Soup. S-O-U.
I have a pitch for...
wait, what are you...
How many signatures out of a... How many signatures have been signed for this so far?
I haven't looked yet. I'd love to guess.
So wait, Mark, you pointed out before the
right
show...
Here.
12.
12
people have signed the petition.
12. Let's get to 100.
You could get it to 100 with
but
this podcast.
It is, Mark, you were saying that it is a different company.
It's called Sweet Tomatoes.
It's like a Hardee's Carl's Jr. shady. I don't know. They call me something else in this town.
Hellman's Mayo.
I've got, by the way, like a sort of a bus ad.
What's Hellman's?
For
Best Foods.
Oh.
For woke soup.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Speak truth to chowder.
Wait, is Hellman's Miracle? What's that?
That's my bus campaign for woke soup is speak truth to chowder.
I guess we got to specialize in chowders now.
Spend $8 on
I feel like if you told Soup Plantation, if you brought that petition to them, they'd be like, let's just close.
No, thank you.
I don't have the energy to start a whole new.
You know what?
I love your idea, Dave, about the socially conscious. You should do it.
Speaking of closing.
Oh, no.
No.
What? It's time, guys.
Wow.
I'm so sorry to bring this joyous event to an end. But we have to. We're out of time.
There's a micro debate later on or now to be had where the topic is this conversation was ultimately good for Soup Plantation.
I think it was
a sum total win for Soup Plantation.
I think it was. They need to hear the hard truths.
I think we should follow the thread of Soup Plantation throughout the year in 2018.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
See what if we can make a difference, maybe. Then next year's holiday episode will follow up.
Butts and soup. Take a look.
We'd all like them to change the name, right? Even John, you were arguing
100%.
Yeah, that's it's a smarter business move. Yeah.
100%.
Does anyone own point, shares in Soup Plantation?
Also, at this point, it's not even a good name.
Okay, guys, we'll see you next week on The Great Debates.
Well, I've been afraid of changing because I've built my life.
The Great Debates is produced by Mark Caracello. The theme song was composed by Christopher Knight. The debaters are Steve Healy and Dave King, and the podcast is moderated by Dan Medina.